Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry K.B., and I'm a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Northern California. Today is Tuesday, February the 12th, 2019, and this is our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we are in Chapter 1, page 8 in Bill's story. We're going to read the first paragraph, beginning with "No words can tell of the loneliness and despair," and we'll be reading this one paragraph only, and it ends with "Alcohol was my master." We'll be commenting on this paragraph only. Today's readers are Martha S. for the 12 Steps, Stephanie L. for the 12 Traditions, and the readers of our text are Cindy B., Wendy B., and Eileen M. Our newcomer greeter today is Melanie C. The share ID for yesterday, that's Monday, February the 11th, 2019, our 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,531. That's 12531. And the share ID for this morning's Tuesday, February 12th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 12,534. That's 12534. The OA Preemblem. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask, Martha S. to read our 12 steps of OA. Martha?
Yes, good morning. This is Martha S., compulsive overeater in upstate New York. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
And thank you, Martha. And now Stephanie L. will read our 12 traditions. Stephanie?
Hey, good morning, everyone. It's Stephanie L., and I'm a compulsive overeater in Southern California. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
And thank you, Stephanie L. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and our readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you have done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 8, paragraph 1 in Bill's story. Comments will be on that paragraph only, and that begins with no words can tell, ending in alcohol was my master. And we'll now, Cindy D., please get us started by reading. Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Much like what was said even before the meeting, this is such a powerful paragraph. It's kind of funny, powerful paragraph about powerlessness. To me, this is the perfect definition of powerlessness. And, you know, no words can tell. I just remember, you know, not being able to explain to anyone in my life how I felt about, you know, food having control over me and how lonely it was. But boy, could I feel it. Couldn't explain it, but I could feel it. And it did feel like quicksand, you know, that I was sinking into this hole and I couldn't find a lifeline. I couldn't find anything to grab onto. I just felt so hopeless. And I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed by most everything in my life. The smallest problems became huge and large, and I did feel like food was my master and that it had control over me. And it was a place of complete, you know, sorrow and sadness and definitely self-pity of feeling sorry for myself and so sorry that I couldn't find a way out of it. But now, you know, today, you know, coming into OA, found a place where I can talk about it and people do understand and we can relate on such a deep level. And, you know, I've heard people say that we connect first at the problem. You know, we share this common problem and it binds us together and that later we're bound by the solution. And I find that to be true, that my master now is my higher power. He's my guide, my master. He's everything in helping me live a more peaceful and serene life. And, you know, I have feelings that come up and I have life happening and stuff that in the past would have sent me reeling and spinning. But I have tools and I have the steps and I have my fellows and they help me stay out of that. They help me stay away from the quicksand. And the miracle of it is, you know, I've been going through some of that over the last day or so, with something in my family, and I realized this morning when I was talking to one of my fellows that I haven't thought about food. Food hasn't been an option. Food hasn't felt like my master. It hasn't called to me at all, and that is a miracle. And that's because I did find something that was stronger than my disease, and that for me is God. And I work my program hard every day, and I share it to the best of my ability with others who are feeling this loneliness and this despair. And I'm just so grateful that I'm here, and I'm so grateful I have the opportunity to share. And for newcomers, keep coming back, because the solution is here. At least for me it was, and I'm a living miracle. And with that, I will pass.
And thank you, Cindy B. And so again, we're reading in Chapter 1, Bill's story, starting with the first paragraph on page 8, beginning with "No words can tell the loneliness and despair," ending with "Alcohol was my master." So who would like to share today?
Ginger C.
At the same time.
Ginger C.
Okay, I've got Ginger C. Oh.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, who was that? Something B?
Beatrice O.
I'm sorry, that was before Beatrice?
Shawnee B.
I'm sorry, was that Shawnee B?
Yes, you got
okay.
it.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Got Leot that. Thank you.
Leot TD.
Leot TD, uh-huh.
Kara L.
Sorry?
Kara L.
Was that Sarah
Lisa
L?
Lisa F.
Kara.
That's Sarah L or yeah. Carol L?
Kara.
Kara.
Yes.
Kara L. Okay.
Reggie O.
Reggie O. So we want to hear from some people I haven't shared in a few days, and then I'll get to the others on the next round. So let's see. I need one more.
Lisa F.
Lisa F. Okay, so I have Ginger C, Shawnee B, Leot TD, Kara L, Reggie O, and Lisa F. Ginger, would you go ahead and get us started, please? And you'll be followed up by Shawnee B.
Hi. Hi, Sherry. Good morning. It's Ginger C, recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado, and thank you so much for your service. And welcome to everyone on the line, especially the new person or somebody who's still possibly eating today. And a powerfully painful paragraph. And this is exactly what happens for us as food addicts. You know, alcohol became my master, and I was enslaved to every bite, and it was unbelievably painful. And again, thank God for every beautiful bite, because one less bite, I may not be recovered today. I may not have been out of the food. I may not have gotten convinced in the way I had to really be convinced. Because I always had the back door open. When life got a little too difficult, I was definitely going to eat. Absolutely. Guaranteed. And then, again, this disease only progresses. It only gets painful and it gets worse. And then I wake up to the reality. This is life and death. This is serious business. Because the pain got so bad, I didn't want to live. I just wanted to die. The food wasn't even working. I couldn't stop eating. And I didn't want to live anymore. And so, absolutely, it was my master, and I was blown away when I started passing out from eating food. My first binge was on this peanut butter kick, and I could not believe that I passed out from food. I felt like an alcoholic drinking booze. I was so drunk on the food. And then I couldn't even get out of bed because I started my morning every morning with a shot. Like, I needed a shot of whiskey to move my feet and to get to the bathroom. I needed these lemon heads in my nightstand drawer to even begin to move. So, you know, and I just, the self-pity, God, isn't that the worst place we can go? It is so about morbid self-reflection, and it is deep and dark, and it's a hole that I fall into, and it is painful. That self-pity is probably one of the worst places I can go to as a recovered person today. And thank God again for these clear-cut directions, because nothing saves the day like working with another. For 5 minutes, I stop thinking about me and my problems, and I remember that there's a much bigger picture and that God is everything. So again, I'm just so grateful to be tapped in today, and I just pray that I always move a muscle. I had to do one of the hardest phone calls in a long time, took such courage, and God gave me the strength to pick up that phone and to do that next right thought and action. And that's what this is all about, because I have an ego that will convince me any way but to go the wrong way. And then thank God, God brings me back and helps me to do this work, because I don't do it. It is not about Ginger. It's about a higher power. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. And Shawnee B., you're up, followed by Liat TD. Shawnee? Star one to unmute, Shawnee.
Hi, you hear me?
Now I can. Thanks, Shawnee.
I was like talking to myself. Thank you for having me on, and I'm grateful that I got on the line this morning, because hearing these few sentences, I think really coincides with the concept of every day, you know, waking up and remembering that I am powerless over food, and without my higher power, my life is unmanageable. And these few sentences really bring me back to, not to sound like too dramatic, but like a state of hell. I think it was the pastor, I don't remember who said this, the first year, something to the effect of, nobody understood. I'm a young mom and I'm surrounded by, you know, young, attractive women. And it's like, yeah, I'm dieting just like you, but something is wrong. Something is wrong. And I'm so grateful to my higher power for bringing me that. I'm such a young mom. This could have only come to me when I was, you know, 40, 50, 60. Thank God, you know, at the ripe age of 30, I'm able to learn about this disease, and I'm able to reach out to something greater than me and something higher than me. And I was like, just thinking about this the other day, in the food, there was so much loneliness. And it's not like I'm more social now. Well, I am in a sense, because, you know, reaching out, but just having a higher power has filled that emptiness, that gap, that void, that pain. And I would have never known that is what spirituality could do for me. I'm surrounded by brothers and sisters, family, you know, left and right. And yet there's always that loneliness, and that, you know, that pain that Bill talks about. And I'm truly so grateful and so humbled to be on the line. And I appreciate what each of you have done for me. Have a blessed day. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Shawnee B. And Liat TD, you're up, followed by Kara L. Liat?
Yes, good morning, Sherry. Good morning, everyone. Is it so noisy?
It's a little noisy.
Bridge. Okay, let me try to move out of this bridge. Liat TD recovered, compulsive eater from California. Trying to run over this bridge, get away from this
pretty
bridge
noisy
quickly. Yeah, I'm sorry. Gosh, I love, you know, I love the book. And I was thinking about, when I was reading it, where Bill is at. You know, a while ago, he had his first visit with Dr. Silkworth. And the doctor told him about the allergy of the body. And he had hope, right? Wow. That's the problem. I can't eat sugar and flour. That's a problem. And, you know, and he's for 3 months, you know, he's able to stay away. And then that day comes and alcohol is back in his life. It's just a nuisance. That's something that's not going away. What a bummer, you know? And just thinking, this is a great place to be, but it's a horrible, painful place to be. And I was there too. Just place it. You know that it doesn't matter whether you know that sugar is your problem, that it's coming back. Sugar is coming to attack you, you know? And knowing it is such a painful place because, you know, how are you going to face it? You know, like they used to say to me, you know, you take the tiger out of the cage, read it three times a day. Well, who in the world will walk a wild animal three times a day? It's going to attack me. What power do I have against this animal, this tiger? So Bill knows it's going to attack him, and it's so, you know, he's back in the alcohol, you know. And so the whole thing is that no matter what, you know, human power, to he's in a place where no matter what human power he has, it's coming back. He's going to drink. That's the reality. I'm going to eat. Whatever I do, I'm going to eat. And how lucky we are that later on, Abby comes and whispers in his ear that there is a solution, that he can hand that tiger to a higher power. He doesn't have to walk it anymore. And that's what happened to me. God, you know, someone whispered in my ear that I don't have to handle the food. I can put it down and God will take care of the rest. And I love you all, Jeff.
And thank you, Liat. And Kara L., you're followed up by Reggie O. Kara?
Good morning. This is Kara L. from California, recovered compulsive overeater. Thank you to everybody that's doing service today on the line. This is so descriptive of where I was, you know, the loneliness, the despair, and the morass of self-pity. The morass of self-pity, wow, you know, even though I was in program, I felt like I was abstinent. My life was so unmanageable still. And I was in that self-pity. I was the victim. Everything was happening to me. There was, you know, I was doing everything I could. And this is I. I didn't have a power greater than myself. I thought I did, but I hadn't really turned my life and my will over. I hadn't done those things that give me my connection with my higher power today. I hadn't turned all the small decisions in my life. What should I have for breakfast? Which way should I walk? Should I go into work to do this or work from home? I always decided that, all right, my higher power is there and I pray, but I hadn't really turned those things over. I hadn't asked. I hadn't worked. I had worked the steps, but I needed to work them again with vigorous honesty. And, you know, it was given to me because I was going through my program. I was talking at meetings. I was what I felt was absent, and I was so overwhelmed with life. My life was unmanageable, and the food was my master because I couldn't. I was almost paralyzed at mouth. What do I eat? What do I don't eat? What do I, you know, the binging had stopped, but then the rigorous control had started. Can I eat? Can't I eat? People don't understand me because they keep making these things and I can't eat them. And it was just the center of my life. And I'm so blessed that, you know, a fellow, you know, through a series of circumstances, fellow said, you know, I worked these steps through vision. And I was so, you know, judgmental about vision, truthfully. And out came my mouth was, can you please take me through them? Let me see them. And I was judgmental through the first five steps, everybody, to be totally honest. And my spiritual awakening came. And now I can't tell you how much it's changed my life. The freedom from food, the freedom from my self-pity, the freedom from my emotions, the freedom to trust my higher power to take care of my life today. And, you know, to do the work, to work with fellows, to feel part of. It is a true miracle in my life today, and I'm so glad that this fellow mentioned something to me and was willing to take me through the steps again. I'm very thankful for all the recovery I've gotten, and with that, I will pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Kara L. Reggie O., you're followed by Lisa F.
Reggie? Hi, good morning. Hi, Sherry. Thanks for your service this morning, everybody on the line. This is Reggie O. from out here in the Los Angeles area. And, you know, I didn't have any idea what I was going to share this morning. I just read this paragraph, and it's like, yes, 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 you know. And alcohol was my master. You know, compulsive eating was my master. And, you know, I thought so much has come to me listening to people. You know, one of the things is that, you know, yeah, compulsive overeating and certain food substances was my master. And I can put all of those things down and get and, you know, release the allergy, which, you know, we've heard of the first part of the, you know, the first part of this work here. But, you know, what is my master is that mental obsession, you know, that mental obsession that would keep me and actually will today keep me out of my life and keep me in that, you know, loneliness, despair, bitter morass of self-pity, quicksand. The quicksand of it all is such a very, you know, apt description. And throughout Bill's story here, he talks about, you know, all of the beautiful solution of alcohol, right? You know, it'll take the fog away. It'll, you know, the old fierce determination came back when the stock market dropped, you know, the prodigious bender, you know, when he was running around, roaming around with all of the wealthy and the suntan, you know, it was like, it was his solution to everything, even his creativity, as he told his wife. And then, boy, you know, there's such an illusion there. Yeah, that solution and remembering the solution, you know, one of the best things I ever heard is that solution of ease and comfort and exhilaration and this and that lasts for about 6 or 8 seconds. And then I'm done. I'm like a slave to this master and I can stay away for any period of time. From all of it so that, you know, the allergy doesn't grab me and take me under for however long it would. But then there's the mental obsession. And, you know, and that is why I need to do this every single day. I feel so blessed, you know, can get up and do this every morning because no matter how recovered I get, no matter how well I'm doing in my life, if I don't stay in this solution, you know, actively, the mental obsession certainly it has been my history, has always at some point come back and grabbed me when I least expected me and taken me out with the allergy again. And then that just, you know, that vicious cycle stops. The loneliness, I don't know how much time I have. I'll try to make this quick, but the loneliness, I realized how lonely I felt kind of like as a way of being when I recovered the first time. It was like all of those feelings came up. And then it's like, you know, through the dis-ease, I, you know, I can look back this morning and say, oh my gosh, yeah, and that's what I did, you know. I would just stop here for now. And there's more to the story, but really grateful to be able to share this morning. Thanks.
And thank you, Reggio. And before we hear from Lisa F., I just want to remind everybody where we're at. We're on page 8, which is in Bill's story. Paragraph 1, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair ending with alcohol was my master. So as soon as we hear from Lisa F., I will be taking some more names and hear some more sharing. So Lisa, please go ahead. Lisa F.
Yeah, this is Lisa F., and I'm calling from Minnesota. And I'm returning after a hiatus, so I'm working on day 6 today, and this paragraph just feels like every word in it speaks to me and kind of the place that I've been in. I feel like my higher power has allowed me to just be immersed in this program and in a vision this week because I've been home sick with a really bad cold kind of flu bug that's been going around. And so I've literally been reading the big book, listening to podcasts, talking to fellows, and really been immersed in it. And, you know, even when I'm in a house where I think that I have none of my, you know, my red light foods and all that around. It's like even, you know, having cold and taking out cold medicines and cough drops. And it's like, okay, I can't take this. You know, so even at times when I think that I don't have any of those things around, I do have them around. And the the blessing this week is, you know, that loneliness and despair that I was feeling has really been tempered by tons of phone calls, tons of support, people calling me that I don't even know from across the country, taking their time and helping me to navigate getting back in program and figuring this out, because obviously I haven't got it figured out. And I had some encouragement from another fellow a couple days ago to speak on this line, which I've been on hundreds of phone calls of listening to A Vision for You, but I've never, other than introducing myself, I've never really taken that next step to actually speak up. And so anyway, I just feel really grateful to have this meeting and to have a sponsor that I was willing to ask to be my sponsor this last week, and also just all the amazing phone calls that keeps me out of that loneliness and despair, because that loneliness and despair that I can feel can send me back into the food every time. And I can feel that whether I'm surrounded by people, you know, whether I'm at work, whether I'm doing my job, when you're into the food, it's just always there. So thanks for listening.
And thank you, Lisa F. And now just reminding everybody, we're on page 8, paragraph 1. Who would like to share?
Brandy M.
Becca R.
Lindsay
M. Irene. Okay, I heard Lisa R.
Julie E. B.
Julie
Donna W.
Lindsay B.
Deborah P.
Eileen O. Pat B.
Okay. All right, I heard a Lindsay. Was that Lindsay M?
Lindsay B.
Lindsay B. Okay. I heard a Pat M. And I heard a Deborah
Pat,
P.
Pat B.
Pat B. Okay. B is in Baker?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Deborah P.
Julie E.
I got you, Julie.
Thank
Did
you.
I hear
on the
Deborah?
W?
Yes,
did
Deborah
Carrie
P.
C.
Sorry, did I hear a Deborah P?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, and I can take one more.
Carol
on the
R.
W.
Okay, you came in together.
Carol?
Carrie C.
Carol?
Carol R.
R. Thank you. Okay, so this is the lineup. I have Lisa R., Julie E.B., Lindsay B., Pat B., Deborah P., and Carol R. Lisa, go ahead, please. Lisa R. Star 1 to unmute Lisa R. Lisa? We can't hear you, Lisa R. Okay, so I'm going to ahead and let's go with Julie E.B., and we'll pick up Lisa R. afterwards. Julie?
Hi, this is Julie E.B. I am here. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you, Julie.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to get in there with my name a couple times, but this is my paragraph. I mean, this was my life. You know, we say sometimes on this line that food was not the problem. Life was the problem. And I see it summarized here. You know, my problem wasn't just the self-pity. I felt after a binge. That was not my problem. I woke up in it this morning, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, I had a cold. I had a patient complaint at work. My son's not doing too great, suicidal. And I woke up in it today asking why. And I know I have to get out of it. It's like 4:50 in the morning, and I'm reaching out because, for me, it goes self-pity, resentment, food. And this makes food my master. If I'm in self-pity, the more I wiggle around, I love this image of quicksand, a bitter morass of self-pity. Poor me, poor me. And I have some legitimate reasons to be concerned today, to be apprehensive today, but it just doesn't work for me. like it says in the next sections of the book, if I'm in self-pity, I just over-amplifies my own ego. I begin asking, why me, God? Poor me, God. And all of a sudden, I'm trying to run my life. I'm either trying to be either more demanding or more gracious, but really I'm just a self-seeker trying to grab what I can from life, stepping on the toes of my fellows. So I got to tell you, if you are feeling bad for yourself today, if you have legitimate reason to feel bad, reach out, because we cannot get out of self-pity alone. Just like quicksand, as someone said on the earlier meeting, someone, the more you move in it, the deeper you get. Someone's got to throw you a rope. And when you're mastered, the one other thing, the reason I love this paragraph when I read it with my sponsees, this is step one right here. Once he knows he's cornered at last, alcohol is his master, this is it. This is the beginning of recovery right here. When I feel bad for myself and there's nothing I can do about it, I reach out, I say, not why me, God, but how. And the how is reaching out, taking the next right thought, the next right action. And I have been loved today and listened to today and brought back into a place of appreciation of my higher power. So I just want you to know that life is my problem, but I cannot. Some people maybe can indulge in some self-pity. It doesn't work for me. It just leaves me stuck. So I reach out, keep reaching out, keep trying, because we need each other. This is a WE program. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you, Julie B. And Lisa R., did you come back on the line that we can hear you? Can you star one to unmute? Lisa R. Okay, we'll go ahead and go with Lindsay B. And we'll go with Pat B. after that, and then we'll see if Lisa R. can get back
on. Good
morning.
Good morning, my Vision family. This is Lindsay B. from New Hampshire, recovering today. What a powerful paragraph. I really wanted to share on this today. You know, no one can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity, quicksand stretched around me in all directions. When I was about probably 7 or 8, my brothers and I was a tomboy, it used to go up behind my house, and there were a lot of old pottery works, and there was a roped-off area of quicksand. And, you know, quicksand is a pretty exciting thing, you know, like the idea of, we didn't really know that it was quicksand, but we kind of knew that it must be, you know, it was roped off, so that makes it all the more intriguing. And I did get stuck in that quicksand. And I remember that feeling of just like lost, of just totally being powerless. And my brother pulled me out and left a boot of mine in the quicksand. And you know, there was no thought to go back in to grab that boot. And what I do when I get into a place of self-pity, loneliness, and despair, I feel like the only thing that is going to save me is to take that which I think in some ways did save me growing up. You know, I was a sugar addict from a very, very young age. Went to bed every night with food under my pillow. Didn't feel like I could exist without it. It had to be there in case I needed it. But when I'm in a place of pain, but without the suffering and without the poor me, I can turn to something that I know will fill me, that's not going to hurt me. You know, whether it be music, my dance, there were so many amazing things that I've reclaimed since I have this abstinence back. But when I'm in self-pity, the first thing is to go back to that thing that is killing me. And it's like going back into the quicksand and, you know, expecting not to sink. Today, I woke up too feeling like I was in the quicksand. I had a dream where I was eating. It terrified me. And it doesn't matter what amount of thinking and knowledge I have in my mind, I cannot get myself out of that quicksand. So I'm connected. I'm talking on this meeting. You know, I'm sharing, I'm responding to people looking for help, because that's how I get out of the quicksand. And thank God today in this moment, food is not my master. But unless I continue to wake up every morning knowing I am an untreated addict and be willing to take the medicine, which I don't always want to take, I will be back there. Blessings to you all. Thank you.
And thank you, Lisa B. And Pat B., you're followed by Deborah P. Pat? Star 1 to unmute, please.
Hi, this is Pat B. in Calgary, Alberta, recovered. And I remember this morass of self-pity, November the 4th, 1984, the day before I found OA. Well, actually, the night, November the 4th, I met my Ebby. But I had been hurt my back at work, and I couldn't move. And yet I could manage to get up off the sofa and go into the kitchen and start binging. And I was screaming at myself to stop doing it, to get back on the couch, get out of the kitchen. I felt totally insane. I felt like I had been taken over by Revenge of the Body Snatchers. It was not what I wanted to be doing. I was totally overwhelmed, and food was my master. It was awful. And yet, if I had not had that experience, I would not be recovered today. And so it was a blessing for me to feel so crazy. I didn't even know about OA at that time. My husband came home and suggested we go up to the Y so I could go into the hot tub, and maybe that would help my back. And my Ebby was at the Y and talked to me about OA, and I went to the meeting the next day and got abstinent and learned about life. I had already basically done steps 1, 2, and 3 by the time I got to OA, because I knew that my life was unmanageable. And I knew that if I couldn't manage it, something else had to. I didn't know about God at that time, so OA became my higher power. But what I can still, as I'm talking about it, I can feel that panic in me and that morass of self-pity. And I had no idea how I was going to get out of it, but thank you. Thank you, thank you. Vision for you. I've been listening for many years. This is the first time I've shared. And I'm just so grateful. Went to the met some of you at the OA birthday party in LA. And I am just so thrilled to be a part of this fellowship. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Pat B. And Deborah P., you'll be followed by Carol R. Deborah?
Hi, this is Deborah, compulsive overeater. Thank you very much. I'm kind of new, and I think last time actually I shared kind of about a similar, basically what how my life had become unmanageable, and that was just that I ended up totally and completely alone. And so I just kind of ended up in the rooms out of desperation, you know, and I connected with one person, and that like changed my life pretty much. I mean, it just, I have been very resistant about these 12 steps, and I, for whatever reason, I'm now like, wow, this is amazing how this program and these people can kind of just carry you through. And I appreciate what the one woman said about how the self-pity was actually the beginning of that downward spiral, because, you know, sometimes since I'm kind of new, like I don't really, I mean, I'm starting to write things down and think about things, but like I don't really, like what trigger, you know, how does it start? And so I think with me, that's probably too, like there's self-pity because my, you know, I've got medical things. I'm like, oh my God, this sucks. Like what difference does it make? You know, I might as well just eat. But once I eat, it's, you know, talk about quicksand, my medical stuff, man, it's quicksand. I mean, that's a perfect example of how the food affects me in every way. It affects my disease, my compulsive overeating, affects all the other physical stuff happening in my life. And so I'm very grateful, and I'm very grateful to all the people that called me. A lot of people just stepped up to the plate and gave me a call, so I really appreciate that. And thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah and Carol R. You're up, and we'll see if Lisa R. is still on the line. Carol?
Hi, good morning. My name is Carol R. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for leading, and thank you, everyone, for all the service you do and whoever shared today. I'm really getting a lot out of this meeting. Boy, oh, boy. As we were reading it, I could remember myself sitting on the sofa just so full of self-pity. And I had visions of me always starting a diet on Monday morning, and then by 11 or 1 o'clock, I'd be off to the races with the food again, always back in the food. It's like Bill pounding his hands on the bar again. How did I get this? And I remember myself sitting on the couch, just so full of self-pity, thinking, you know, I didn't really understand at the time why until I got into the program and really, like, learned about myself. But, you know, I was raised by a mom, God bless her, I love her, and I forgive her, but she just wasn't there for me in an emotional way. And, you know, I was dealt this card in life where I didn't have a nurturing mom, and I really missed out on some things. And I just felt like, you know, I don't know, like I was full of self-pity and loneliness. I remember being newly married and sitting on this couch and, like, feeling so lonely. And I'm like, this just isn't right. This just isn't the way it's supposed to be. And I have a vision of going out in the middle of the night. I'm from Pennsylvania, just north of Philly. I used to live in Philly, South Street. And I dressed like, I had my pajamas on, and I put an overcoat over and boots, and I went out at 2 o'clock in the morning looking for my fix, like a cocaine addict, looking for my sugar. And there were like 5 stores that I would rotate through. And I just remember, like, that is my bottom. You know, that is like, oh, my gosh. The food was my master. Me going out like a cocaine addict at 2 o'clock in the morning in my pajamas, looking, I mean, I could have been killed. There was no thought of that. It was just the food was my master. Oh, my God, I'm thinking about all this stuff. And when I was sitting on that couch, I was thinking about suicide. I'm like, I just was so, like, soaked into it. And, like, I'm telling you, I've come so far from there. Thank you, God. There is a solution. Welcome to the newcomers. There is a solution. We can get out of this. After I put the food down, self-pity was one of the first things that was also taken away from me. Thank you, God. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Carol R. And we do have time. We have about time for a 2-minute share. I think Beatrice O was out there. Beatrice, are you still out there? Beatrice O?
This is Kathy in Colorado. Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Kathy. You have 2 minutes. Thank you. Kathy? Star 110.
I'm still here if she's not there.
Okay. Go ahead, Beatrice.
Okay. I just wanted to say that, you know, food was my God. And for me to eat is to die. And I didn't learn that until this last relapse that I came out of. I think I had the gift of desperation. And, you know, it was curtains for me. I was so scared after all these years of denying the fact that I couldn't eat like a normal person. I finally had to give up. And anyway, that's it. I'm grateful. And again, for me, to eat is to die. So I'm so grateful for Vision. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you, Beatrice O. So that's all the time we have for sharing. Thank you, everyone, for your shares today. It was a great meeting. And I'd like to thank Team Tuesday for their service. That was Martha S. on the 12 Steps, Stephanie L. on the 12 Traditions, Rita Vertex with Cindy D., and Wendy B. will take us out on page 164, and Eileen M. was back up for Waiting in the Wings, and, of course, our newcomer greeter, Melanie C., which Melanie will be talking about after that. Okay, so now we're going to close from the big book on page 64. That's Wendy B., and she will read where it begins with, our book is meant to be suggestive only, ending with keep you until then. Wendy B.?
Yeah, hi. This is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.